Hello, and welcome to the ninth episode of the Strong Style Story Podcast. I am the host, Jeffrey Wessel. Unfortunately, neither Chris DiMassimo nor Steve Cash, who are the usual co-hosts of this show, could make it today, even though we had this scheduled out, but real life will throw curveballs your way. However, instead, we do have a special guest, pro wrestling comic book artist JB Rowe.
Hello.
And he is a huge New Japan fan, probably one of the biggest original adopters of Los Ingobernables de Japón that you're ever going to meet. But one other thing is that he and myself were present at the Global Wars show. So we're going to talk about that the first part of this segment. JB, you want to introduce yourself a little bit more than what I said, or
I think you did a pretty good job.
anything? Do you have any releases that you want to advertise out
I'll do
there?
the plugs at the end.
We'll do the plugs at the end. Okay, fair enough. But yeah, hey, Global Wars, not a bad show at all. It turns out.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. I mean, honestly, those matches could have been garbage, and I still would have had fun.
Yeah, I think the atmosphere of it certainly contributed to it. But all that being said, it was a great show though. I mean, I had a blast, and meeting the guys to begin with, I think it's a good way to start the show. Naito, particularly, for those who don't know, I own one of the CMLL versions of the Ingobernables shirts that had Naito and La Sombra, Rush, Marco Corleone, and La Mascara on it. And when I walked up to Naito, he was like, his eyes. I mean, yeah, he's already mocked for having wide eyes, but they just went even wider because I don't think he's really seen those out there. So it turns out that Tatsuya Naito, for the character he plays, is actually was probably the nicest person in the building that night.
Yeah, I agree. He was a sweetheart.
Yeah, what was your experience like meeting him?
It was great. My buddy, who's also a comic writer, Brett Williams, we were hanging out, and he mentioned to me later that he saw Naito staring me up and down because of the gear I was wearing.
Well, it's funny. While I was in line for to meet Naito, my honey Bee was noticed that Gato was just kind of sitting there by himself because the way it was laid out was going if you're looking at them going left to right, there was Naito, Gato, Okada, and I think Tanahashi was right next to Okada, if I remember correctly, and there was a line for Gato. There was excuse me, a line for Naito. There was a line for Okada, and Gato was just kind of sitting there. So I see him stroking his beard, and B pointed out to me that Gato was stroking his beard. Of course, anyone who's seen me knows I have a pretty epic one myself. So I just kind of said, "Hey, Gato," and he looks over. I just kind of showed mine off, and so we would end up later discussing beard care tips.
What was his tips?
He didn't. I mean, it was kind of loud in there. I asked him if he used like any special soaps or oils, to keep it, not so unruly. He's like, "Oh yeah, we." And then he said something else I couldn't make out just because it was, very loud in there.
Sure.
But
Yeah.
yeah, but anyway, yeah, meeting Naito was great, especially since I got to actually pose with the IWGP title, even though the picture that got taken, you can barely see it, because I ended up resting the plate of it on my shoulder because that thing weighs a freaking ton.
Yeah, it's about 37 pounds, give or take.
Yeah, I think that's what Steve Corino said on the. Oh, sorry, Mr. Wrestling 3 said on the on the TV broadcast too. But yeah, that thing weighs a ton. So
Beautiful
yeah,
hell.
it is. It was nice. I mean, earlier this year, I got to hold one of the IWGP Junior Tag Belts because when I met the Young Bucks in Indy.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, this was this and later that night getting to meet Kushida. Took a great pic of him. I getting to hold the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Belt too. So I mean, all it's missing now is a tag belt. Maybe one of the never belts too. You know.
You could have held the tag belts if you went and saw Guerrillas of Destiny, which.
Oh yeah, you know I didn't even think about that.
I don't think anyone did based on the line.
Really, that's kind of sad, actually, because you know the I mean, I thought Tonga at least had a good following. I thought.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there were some people, but yeah.
Yeah, but it was fun as when I met Okada. There was something I wanted to ask him if he remembered a match from 2007 that he had with Josh Prohibition. This was even before he joined New Japan. And he kind of smiled and said, yeah. I said, yeah, do you remember what you said that night? He kind of just started laughing. Because I don't know. Have you ever seen that video that's out there?
Yeah, yeah.
He looks like a booby.
He does. I mean, actually, it's funny because that's what B calls him. Any old footage of pre-Rainmaker Okada, she calls him Baby Okada.
it's funny.
It's not too inaccurate either. I don't
know. He's tiny. I mean, he definitely bulked up.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was funny when, you know, rewatching, you know, on New Japan on Access, they just showed, you know, the match he had with AJ Styles at Dominion last year. And for some reason in that match, he, like, slimmed down. Like, you could, like, before he had, like, really chubby cheeks, and then, like, he was, like, almost gaunt in comparison in that match. But he's gotten back up to where he was.
Yeah.
Think. Yeah.
And he's as tall as I thought he was going to be.
Yeah, we were told he's like 6'20" or something is what Steve said. And he is one of the taller New Japan guys. I mean, you can clearly see that. We were kind of amazed that Seiya Sanada stands eye to eye with him.
Yeah, Sanada is a pretty big dude.
But yeah, he really is not as the camera does add about a foot. You know, when you're watching on TV versus in person.
Which is weird because in WWE, all the guys that you don't think are tall end up looking really, really tall.
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't Taz something like 4'6" or something?
Oh, no, I mean, I'm thinking of like Sheamus. He doesn't look that tall, but then in real life, he's like giant.
Oh, is that right? I wouldn't know. But, so anyway, the show itself was fun. It was funny how one of the biggest shocks in the night was not in the main event. It was actually in the pre-show dark match because neither Juice Robinson nor Kama Itachi were announced for this show. And yet here they were, and they ended up defeating two established tag teams, the All Night Express and Silas Young and the Beer City Bruiser. In a triple threat tag team dark match, that was actually a pretty fun opener. I thought more so than the Women of Honor match, which I don't really rate either Kelly Klein or Mary Dobson. So you'll have that.
Yeah, I didn't really get to catch most of that match because I was still in line to meet Liger.
Now, see, I forewent that because I was already spending, you know, stupid money. And I was hoping to get an Ingobernable's hoodie there, but, you know, the only New Japan gear they really had was Bullet Club stuff.
Yeah, they had Omega and Bullet Club.
Yeah, and they had the blue baseball shirt, but by the time I thought about it, it was like, they'd done like, oh, they have mediums. I was like, well, no, that's not going to fit anybody, so. But, anyway, so, the show began. The show proper began. Dalton Castle defeating Roderick Strong, ACH, and Adam Page in a four corners match. I thought that was a great match. I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really care for Adam Page, but it was a good
match. It was pretty good. Castle won that using Bangarang with Roderick Strong onto Page and then pinning Page.
Yeah, Roderick Strong, man, that guy can go.
He's a good worker. He kind of ticked me off in that Field of Honor match last year that he had with Okada. Because I thought he like no-sold Okada the entire match, and it just kind of ticked me off. While Okada was selling everything that Strong gave.
Weird.
So yeah, I mean maybe it was just the night, but yeah, he plays a better heel than babyface, I gotta say. Roderick Strong does.
Yeah, Roderick is a born to be a heel. There's really no way of him being a face, honestly.
Yeah, I mean in that feud with Jay Lethal, he was painted as the big baby face, but yeah,
Yeah.
that the yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say I don't think he works well as a face. I mean, PWG Roderick Strong is probably one of my favorite heels.
Yeah, with which it's funny you mentioned that because it kind of plays a little bit in discussion of the main event of Global Wars. But moving on, the Addiction Liger and Cheeseburger, that was also kind of a fun match, I thought. Although that botched celebrity rehab that Liger took.
Yeah, that's pretty gross.
Yeah, I mean it didn't look that bad from my angle. I could tell it didn't look quite right, but I later seeing it on like a video of it, which that would have been the same angle you had from where you were sitting, because you were sitting where the hard camera is.
Yeah, it
It,
looked really gross.
yeah, it did. It really did. So I didn't know if it was an angle or what, why he was off the next night in Dearborn, but yeah, that after finally seeing the video of it, yeah, it did not look good. But
Yeah, I think you could tell when he rolled out of the ring and basically didn't do anything else for the rest of the match, that he might have not seriously injured, but enough to be shaken up and
yeah. Well,
call it a day.
that's the risk they take, unfortunately. And when you're dealing with other people and body parts, that sadly it doesn't always end up well. But thankfully he seems to be okay, because he was off the next night in Dearborn, Michigan. He seemed to work the rest of the tour. So
That's good. Well, I'm
so
glad he's okay.
yeah. The next match, I gotta be frank, I didn't really watch it. I we kind of because I can't stand the Briscoes, to be honest. I just have to say, I can't stand the Briscoes. So I didn't really watch War Machine against the Briscoes. What happened in that match? Because it seemed like there was some referee screwiness going on there.
I don't think it was the ref so much as, well, the finish was weird because the bell ringer did not ring the bell.
Yeah, that's what I thought. They were raising hands, but I didn't hear a bell. And there were a couple of times I actually did not hear the bell throughout the night.
Yeah, a lot of people were complaining that the person responsible for ringing the bell did not do a good job at all.
Yeah, like I said, I noticed that it seemed to be a couple of times when it just did not happen when it should have. But War Machine ended up retaining, even though I swore that the Briscoes had won at one point.
Yeah, very, very close fall.
Yeah.
Three and three quarters, basically.
Yeah. Of course,
Or
then.
two quarters, sorry.
Right. Yeah. Math hard. Yeah. So I know exactly what you mean.
Why I draw comics.
But yeah, War Machine would end up retaining, but the next night in Dearborn would fight Okada and Gato and retain, but then take on War Machine later, or excuse me, the Addiction later in the night and lose.
Yeah.
So what was the point?
I don't know. I mean, I think they see it as just like this traveling show more so than building a storyline or an angle or anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Addiction had, they've been, complaining forever that, they got boned out of the title against the Kingdom. But yeah, it just seemed like a kind of a weird hotshot booking, though.
Yeah, I didn't understand it, but whatever. I mean,
I mean, Ring of Honor booking in 2016 really hasn't made a whole lot of sense anyway. But we'll get to that here in a minute too.
Yeah, the only booking decision I've seen that actually made any sense so far has been Dalton Castle.
Yeah, I mean he's definitely probably one of the most over wrestlers in Ring of Honor right now.
Yeah, definitely.
Moving on, Tetsuya Naito in probably the match of the night against Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah, this was a great match. And also, it's just really surreal to be able to see Naito live again. That's just a very, very exciting thing to be able to do.
Yeah, especially now. I mean, the difference between last Global Wars War of the Worlds tour and this one is just it's night and day. I mean,
Yeah.
seriously. I mean, because Naito, I mean, he was like a week away from going down to Mexico, and we know what happened since then, and everything since then has been. I let's just put it this way. I don't often engage in Wrestler of the Year shenanigans because I just honestly don't care to take it to that level. But yeah, I think Tetsuya Naito right now is my wrestler of the year.
Oh, undoubtedly. And right now, no one in the business can touch him.
Yeah, and it was just with the year he's had thus far has just been nothing short of incredible. Another candidate for match of the night. Oh, and lest we forget, Naito dropped the threw the belt down not once but twice. I
Yeah.
didn't catch it the first time because from the angle I was sitting.
He dropped it at the entrance to
Yeah,
Raw.
I didn't catch it until I saw the video.
Yeah, that was pretty great. Like the moment he stepped out onto the stage, he just dropped it and walked to the ring.
And you could kind of see me at the end of that match too.
Oh yeah, with the mask, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, you saw me hold. Yeah, that was in case you saw that, you saw some dork holding up a mask. One of the Silver Skull masks. It me. Yep, that was me. But
The match was good, but I was a little bummed out that the IWGP heavyweight title holder is fighting in the middle of a card versus a, for all intents and purposes, a junior heavyweight.
yeah, well, again, Ring of Honor booking.
Yeah.
There's something about that, and it was a non-title match too. So, I mean, there's that. Just to go back to that mask. That mask is sitting on my bookshelf right now because it is signed by Naito, and he seemed more than happy to sign it too.
Yeah, I'm glad you got it signed.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. There was a Comic-Con where on the last day, which was like one of the heavy family cosplay days, I actually spent the first hour of it walking around in that mask, doing the slow walk,
Yeah.
trying to do Naito. There's a picture of myself and JB out there because he had what was it, La Parka?
Yeah, it was a La Parka mask.
Yeah, he has a La Parka mask, and he was wearing an Ingobernables hat that day too, I think.
Yeah, that's me dream booking.
Yeah. Well, things down in Mexico haven't gone so well, though.
Yeah, you want to touch on that now?
Yeah, we can. I mean, while we're here, yeah. If for anyone who doesn't really follow CML, see, on this podcast, we kind of touch on tangents too, because it does affect New Japan somewhat. The original Ingobernables are now apparently dead and buried, depending on who you talk to, because last Friday at Arena Mexico, there was a Rudos versus Rudos main event in which Rush and La Mascara did not get along, and it basically split the group with Rush deciding to team with his father Pierrot, who's older than the hills at this point. And now La Mascara is aligning himself with Shocker, another Ruda who's older than the hills at this point. So yeah, it's kind of a sad way to end the Ingobernables, I think.
Yeah, maybe it could be I mean, it could be an angle, and it might not be the total death of Los Ingobernables in CMLL, but yeah, it is kind of disconcerting.
Well, There's well, Rush is claiming that the Ingobernables are now Russian Pirot. La Mascara is saying it's dead. It doesn't surprise me that it may have ended just because La Sombra had left. So that
Right.
might put a knife in it too.
Yeah, he was definitely the Naido of the originals.
But Naido, yeah, it's just amazing how Los Ingobernables de Japón is now bigger than, and maybe lasts longer than the original faction, which this is not the first time this has happened. Because NWO Japan lasted, I think, like 6 months after WCW itself had died.
Yeah, but I don't think NWO Japan ever reached the heights of popularity as Los Ingobernables de Japón has.
Well, maybe not with American fans, no, but it certainly was still over in Japan because, I mean, to the extent where that's like now a big part of Masahiro Chono's identity there, to the point where I think I remember reading something that Chono finally reached a deal not too long ago with WWE so that he could sell NWO shirts under his
Oh, wow.
trademark.
Okay, I didn't know
Because
that.
that was such a part of his identity in the
Sure.
90s. And, by the time it all ended, NWO Japan was, Keiji Muto, Satoshi Kojima, and Hiroshi Tenzan at the end, feuding with Team 2000, which was Chono and, his group.
Yeah.
Jado and Gato were part of that at one point. So, I mean, it did last, although, it finally did have to end, of course. Because of trademarks and all that,
Right.
but it was it didn't reach the heights of popularity here, because usually every time any of the Japanese guys would show up on Nitro, they get jobbed out, like Great Muta losing to the giant, now the Big Show.
Yeah, let's not talk about those dark times.
But it. But yeah, I mean, it was the NWO was pretty big in New Japan, I thought, and it did end up outlasting, WCW for a little while. I mean, eventually it did have to end. So, but anyway, moving on. The other contender for match of the night. This was a fun, very fun match. Hiroshi Tanahashi and Michael Elgin against Kazuchika Okada and Moose.
Yeah, did you see Tanahashi doing the moose chant while he was stretching?
I did. And there was something that the camera didn't catch. When right before the match started, you see Tanahashi stretching, like kind of crouched down in the corner. I had eyesight of him. I kind of flashed him an L, and he flashed it right back to me. So it's like,
Yeah,
okay.
he's great. I actually really regret not getting a photo with him in a signed 8x10.
Yeah, I didn't get a photo with him. I just shook his hand. I did end up shaking his hand later, though. After the show. He really is a class act. Hiroshi Tanahashi is.
Yeah, he's so posy.
He really is. I mean, it's great. I mean, he's like living the gimmick, you know?
You see when they were doing the signatures and meet and greet, there wasn't really a line for Tanahashi, surprisingly. And he was just standing behind his table, just rocking out, just doing air guitar by himself. And
I did catch a little bit of that, yeah. I thought he had a pretty good line, though. I thought. Maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, maybe at certain points there were some people, but for the most part, the lines that I remember being really long was Liger and Naito
Okada,
and
too.
Okada, right.
Yeah.
Tanahashi was just kind of by himself.
That's kind of a shame if that's true, because I mean those four, I mean the reactions they had like. Tanahashi and Okada being in the ring together had like the biggest pops of the night, I thought.
Oh yeah, that's for a lot of American fans, that's the closest they're ever going to get to a live Okada Tanahashi match.
Yeah, I mean it was great fun. We've gone on this podcast before at how great and how well the tandem of Tanahashi and Michael Elgin have worked together. Like there is no way this should work that well, but it, by golly, it does.
And I would say mostly due to the grace of Tanahashi. He's so you know, supportive of the new talent, especially Elgin.
Yeah, I mean, it's really worked out. And then I thought Okada and Moose were a good team too. I mean, Moose has shown he can do great stuff with New Japan guys, because you remember the February shows at Korakuen Hall with Moose teaming with Kushida. I thought that was like one of the best matches of the night.
Yeah, I think Moose has definitely improved over the last few, like one or 2 years now.
Yeah,
leaps and bounds. But because I remember even comparing to what he did last year when he had that match against Okada, I think that was at the anniversary show. I could be wrong.
Yeah, that was like, that was just this past February. That
match was not good.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought Okada was a little off, but I thought Moose did okay. I really did. Again, it's too bad Steve isn't here, because he was actually at that show, so he could have given a perspective on that. But yeah, that was I remember it being a pretty okay match. I mean, obviously everybody has, you know, different opinions, but
yeah, it was fine. There was nothing overtly terrible about the match, but I did notice that there were some missed spots, and it just looked a little clunky and didn't flow very well. I didn't know whose fault it was. I kind of just assumed it maybe was because of Moose and his general greenness compared to Okada, but I don't know.
Yeah, well, it could have been an off night, too. Everybody has them, right?
Yeah, that could have been. I met Moose at the AAW show, which was on Friday. Elgin was at that show, too.
Yeah, you got to see Pentagon, too.
Phoenix Pentagon. That was a great match. It was basically the Kirk and Paul show they did. It's the same.
I still have to watch that, too.
It's really good. It was really, really good. The crowd was really into it, and they were throwing dollar bills into the ring at the end of the match.
Yeah, they do that in Mexico. If a particularly good match, they'll actually throw money into the ring.
Right, and although
I think it's more coins than anything.
Yeah,
in Mexico. I think they did
it at the Battle of Los Angeles last year.
Oh yeah,
when Pentagon had his match with Zack Sabre.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet. I'm really behind on PWG.
I am too. That was probably the last PWG show I watched, but it's definitely worth. It's a great match.
In fact, I wanted to. Had some kind of noise coming over there. Yeah, if I when there were the DVDs at the merch table, and I kind of looked at them, I was like, yeah, you know, I got so much backed up, you know, you know, from Japanese stuff that I can't really justify adding to my to watch pile at this point, you know. But it's funny you mentioned last year, though, because it wasn't Kazuchika Okada's opponent from the last Global War show, Cedric Alexander, is no longer with Ring of Honor. Last night was his last show.
Yeah.
Losing to Donovan Dijak. So I hope, I think Cedric Alexander's pretty cool, so I hope he gets something good. There's rumors about him doing the Global Cruiserweight Tournament for WWE, but we'll see about that.
Yeah, that'd be great. It'd be cool to see him and Rich Swann in that tournament together.
Yeah, nothing official's been made about that. Moving on, the match following that, I wouldn't call it one of the matches of the night, but it finally corrected what I personally feel is one of the worst bits of ROH booking in recent memory, with Bobby Fish beating Tomohiro Ishii for the Ring of Honor World TV title. You and I, we talked when we recorded something for another website, which has yet to see the light of day and probably won't because the recording was so horrible from my phone, but, you know, sorry about that, guys.
Really loud.
it was really loud when we were trying to do that. But I've ranted at length on this show about how awful that booking was to give Ishii that title. But, you know, they've finally done it. So now we have Bobby Fish against Dalton Castle to look forward to in the near future.
Right, which would have been, you know, it would have been better seeing Castle and Ishii, but, you know, whatever. Can't have everything.
Yeah, I don't know if Castle and Ishii could work together that well, though.
I think that would have been a fantastic match.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That would have been money.
You know, I think Castle could work well in Japan. Maybe not New Japan. Maybe. I mean, he's made appearances in New Japan, you know, at those shows and at Korakuen in February. You know, with the ones where the Young Lions, Kawada and Kanemitsu, were acting as the boys.
Yeah.
But I think, like, you know, with that deadlift German suplex, I could see Castle getting over in, like, you know, Big Japan in some way, or DDT.
DDT would definitely be a home for Castle, but
yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean Castle's great. I mean, he's probably my favorite. He's definitely one of my top five favorite non-Japanese wrestlers right now.
Yeah, he's a supreme talent.
He is, and I mean, that deadlift German suplex he does is just a joy to behold each time. But so moving on, the penultimate match was an 8-man cluster with Young Bucks, the Gorillas of Destiny against the Motor City Time Splitters. With I talk with Alex Shelley on Twitter quite a bit, and he's a great guy. So it's great that he got to be in two, not one, but two well-regarded tag teams. Even though he always seems to take the fall in these matches. So.
Yeah.
And Matt Sydal was part of that. There are some, you know, a current IWGP junior tag champion. There is some talk that Sydal might actually be signing to New Japan, but nothing has been made official yet.
Yeah, they'll probably have to get him a new tag partner.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I was surprised, and we'll kind of talk about this. We'll hold off on that because that's Wrestling Dontaku stuff.
Yeah.
But then lastly, the main event of Global Wars really ticked me off. Because Jay Lethal and Colt Cabana were actually having a pretty good match, and 1997 WCW booking came to bear here. You know, I know that they had to do something, you know, to introduce Adam Cole as a new Bullet Club member, but they could have finished the match first, you know?
I didn't mind it. I did like that it played into the whole angle where the Bucks did not land a single super kick during their match.
Yeah, and there was that.
You know, that was clever.
But yeah, I just, you know, I don't care for the you know, that sort of, I mean, I'll at least, you know, have the match end first, you know. And then before doing, you know, the PWG lights out introduction.
I was kind of hoping Super Dragon was going to be there.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's like, you know, this isn't too big of a shock considering, you know, the Cole and the Bucks are already in a faction in PWG with, you know, Roderick Strong as Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
So it's like almost like they're kind of doing this like weird, you know, sort of bringing the continuities together in a way.
Yeah. Now all we need is Roderick Strong and Super Dragon.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because Kevin Steen's not available now. I wonder what happened to him.
Yeah, I heard he's in Mexico helping Generico.
Yeah, something like that.
Feeding orphans.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, and, you know, and it's great that Punk Rock Big Mouth got to design that new Adam Cole shirt. So props to her for that.
Yeah, that was a big surprise. That was really cool.
Yeah, it is cool. Well, I mean, I've got her coloring book, too. Do you have that?
No, I don't have any of Nikki, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I don't have any of her stuff. I'd like to in the near future.
Yeah, so. I got that coloring book in January. I've yet to actually color in it, but I got it. So the, you know, hey, the merch. Now, you know, before we move on from, you know, the War of the Worlds stuff, because the rest of it, I mean, we already discussed the tag team titles, and so there wasn't really much else of consequence that happened, other than on Monday in Dearborn, Adam Page was revealed as a Bullet Club member now.
Yeah, that's I'm not really interested in that.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's face it, they're kind of keeping the Bullet Club on life support at this point.
Again, Roderick Strong should have been Bullet Club, but whatever.
Yeah, they could have done that, and that would have, you know, made it all, you know, the Mount Rushmore, you know, had that continuity there. But Adam Page doing this Hangman gimmick, they better be real careful with that.
Yeah, I don't understand.
That's all I'm going to say. They better be very careful with that, especially who they plan on hanging in future shows, because I think we all know what road that can go down real quick.
It's pro wrestling, so it probably will go down that road.
Yeah, sadly, that's probably the case. And, yeah, they just need to watch themselves on that one. I mean, I don't know why they thought, hey, you know what? I think it's 2016. I think this would be a cool gimmick. What?
Yeah, and I also don't understand Adam Page's gimmick.
Yeah, I don't understand Adam Page's purpose, to be honest. You know,
he also looks too much like Adam Cole, and they have the first names the same. I don't know. Yeah. It's a little confusing.
Well, there's like, yeah, there's also like, you know, there were like two different J's going on in Ring of Honor too. Actually, three, because you know that Joey Diesel Dadiego started out as J Diesel.
Yeah, yeah.
Folks, get your name straight. You know, yeah, there's two different Tetsuyas in New Japan right now, but at least one of them had the good sense to not use it. You know. No, Bushi, you know, Tetsuya Bushi.
Yeah, they just call him Bushi. Smart.
Yeah, so, anyway, so, yeah, do we have to, they wrapped up the tour last night in New York. I saw the results.
I haven't watched or heard anything about the New York or Toronto dates.
Yeah, I mean, the Toronto was a TV taping, so that, Toronto was a TV tape, so that one is, you know, that'll come out as time goes on. So, you know,
gotcha.
See that. I think everything else, you know, Ring of Honor records everything. So, you know, it'll be, you know, it'll all come out. It seems like the Addiction, the only real match of consequence was the Addiction retained the tag team titles by disqualification over War Machine, because they had to revise that whole show because of injuries to Nick Jackson. He's out with broken ribs, which we'll discuss that in greater detail too, because that affects the coming New Japan tour too.
Yeah, there was also talks that Naito wasn't going to wrestle that match because I guess he had a very high fever.
Well, he did, and apparently tore the house down, too.
Of course, it's Naito.
Yeah, exactly. The most surprising booking was Roderick Strong pinning Ishii in the what became the Ring of Honor versus New Japan versus Bullet Club three-way match, with Jay Lethal and Roderick Strong against Okada and Ishii against Adam Cole and Matt Jackson.
That would have been a great match to see live.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to end up on video. We know that much. So, eventually. So, all right. Do we have anything else to say about War of the Worlds? Other than it was kind of fun and, you know, we're glad that it happened.
Nope, not really. I think that's about it.
And that sums it up, you think?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So prior to that, Wrestling Dontaku happened.
Yeah, I've only caught, I didn't catch the whole show, but I caught parts of it.
Yeah. Well, I ended up watching most of it in a hotel room in Louisville, Kentucky, because, you know, real life work stuff took me there. So a couple of surprises on those shows, though, I got to say. I mean, obviously, Naito was going to – there was no way Ishii was going to beat Naito this soon.
Yeah, that's the match I did not get to watch, but I heard it's really good, and I heard
– it is good.
Yeah, I heard that Ishii, there were a lot of close falls in that match.
There were, I mean, again, there was no way that they were going to have Naito drop this quickly. I was kind of surprised that Okada, they didn't let Sonata go over Okada.
Well, you know.
The fact that this is his first singles match, and his first singles match is a semi-main event against Okada, that alone is a big deal.
It is, and I mean, he looked really good too. I mean, there were a lot of near falls and near taps too, because you know Sonata's finisher is a submission. They call it Skull End in New Japan, but it was called it used to be known as This Is It.
Yeah,
it's like that weird body scissors dragon sleeper. But, yeah, I mean, that was a good match, I thought. And, again, it's amazing how now there's a guy that stands eye-to-eye with Okada in New Japan.
Yeah, and they did a good job kind of building up that move in the Road to Dontaku shows.
Yeah, they did. In fact, he won a few matches in those with that move, too.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the Ingobernables are still, even though Naito, but it's weird, Naito gets all the love, but the rest of the Ingobernables are still treated like rudos. So,
it's a little weird, isn't it?
Say again?
Yeah, I said, yeah, that is a little strange. And also, I thought it was kind of weird that during Sonata's match, there was no Ingobernables shenanigans. Like, none of the members were there.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe they didn't, you know, they figured they didn't need it. I mean, Evil beat Goto. Which Goto gets no love anymore. I'm really starting to feel bad for Goto.
Yeah, they didn't do him any favors with the booking.
Yeah, they continue to not do any favors with him. It's starting to get, you know, kind of worrisome. Some of the other surprises from that show, though, I was actually pretty surprised. Ricochet and Matt Sydal beat Roppongi Vice for the junior tag belts.
Yeah, which is really strange considering what's going on with Ricochet.
Yeah, well, we don't know what's going on with Ricochet. That's the thing. Unless you have some insight, I don't. But last I knew, he's still obviously part of Best of Super Juniors, and you know, and he's obviously doing this in his free time from Lucha Underground tapings.
I mean, all I know is what leaked about Lucha Underground, and also it was revealed Ricochet had a date in like June or July with Dragon Gate.
So is that right?
Yeah, so that kind of throws up some flags. He might very well be on his way out.
What happened with Lucha Underground? Because I've been kind of out of the loop a little bit the last couple of weeks. What happened with Lucha Underground?
Well, so I don't know if you heard about what happened with MVP. They were taping season 3. MVP did a couple of sit-down interviews for his podcast over on MLW Radio, and they talk about a lot of spoilers, and he got in trouble for it.
I did hear about that, but I didn't hear any real details of what was said.
Well, basically, Ricochet's character, Prince Puma, kayfabe, dies.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
So, well, okay, even if that's the case, though, my understanding of the contracts of Lucha Underground is that they're contracted for, like, the 3 seasons, but it elapses after it's broadcast, not after it's taped.
Right.
Well, at this point, season 3 of Lucha Underground won't finish broadcasting. You know, if we, you know, we've heard that it's about a November start time. So even if it goes through, it won't end until about spring of 2017.
Yeah, I think my theory is he's going to do his Dragon Gate date as his farewell show with Dragon Gate.
And then he's likely going to be going over to Orlando at the NXT Training Center, where he'll be there for, you know, probably a few months. And then they'll hopefully debut him on NXT at some point after that.
Well, he won't be able to take part in the Global Cruiserweight Series if that's the case, though, if our understanding of the contracts.
Well, here's the thing, though. With the Cruiserweight tournament, there's a lot of non-contract guys on that tournament.
Yeah, but this is WWE, and they don't play with others if they don't put them on TV if they're not signed. Because we had that conversation about Kota Ibushi on this show.
Sure, but I mean, if you look at Gargano, if you look at Ciampa, if you look at a lot of the other guys that are not on contract technically, but are still free agents.
Well, but we also discussed how King Cuerno, also known as Elio Del Fantasma of AAA, got invited to this, and both AAA and Lucha Underground have already smacked this down, despite apparently King Cuerno not being part of Season 3 so far.
Yeah, but I think that's more of a AAA decision than it is a Lucha Underground decision.
Yeah, well, that may be, but apparently Elio Del Fantasma hasn't been showing up in AAA lately either, so who knows?
Yeah, I don't know.
Wrestling contract wackiness is, you know, always going to be part of the game. But, yeah, I was just surprised that, you know, just because of the fact that Ricochet and Seidel were part-timers, that they were going to get these belts back. But, lo and behold, they did. Omega and the Young Bucks, you know, beat Tanahashi-gun for the never open weight 6-man comedy belts, which, you know, those are just going to be the hot potato belts forever, aren't they, at this point?
Yeah, I mean, there's really no other use for them.
Yeah, I mean, I still don't even know why they created these, other than, you know, just to have a belt to defend. You know, just having a belt for its own sake is never really a good thing.
I mean, it could be that maybe long term they look to maybe have more trios matches, you know, take a card from CMLL, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, if that's the case, they miss a chance to do something with them during Fantastica Mania.
Sure, but you know, you always have one at once a year, so next year you very well see more of that.
Yeah, that may be true. Grills of Destiny retained over GBH. That's not really a surprise there.
I mean, I know a lot of people like Tama Tonga. He's, you know, he's good, but does anybody like Tongaloa?
I have not seen much out of Tongaloa yet, to be honest. I mean, I've watched, you know, matches with him so far. I just don't see much in him. Period.
Yeah, he just seems like a guy.
He's a guy. It, so far, I mean, yeah, it was pretty, I thought it was pretty cool at first. Like, oh yeah, his brother's coming in, you know, and maybe Tama Tonga will finally start getting some love, but it just, they're not good as a team. I'm sorry. They're not good as a team.
Yeah. He doesn't add anything to Tama. I think actually in a way it's holding back Tama from a solid singles run, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I honestly think Tama at this point would be better suited, like, for the Never belt, which, on that note, Nagata beating Katsuyori Shibata for that was a genuine surprise. Even though we thought that it might happen, it's still a genuine surprise, because Nagata hasn't held a belt in forever.
Yeah, I mean, it was shocking, but at the same time, when you look at it in retrospect, it makes sense, with putting the belt on Nagata, and like you said, him not having a belt in so long. It's like a big, it's a good little, you know, nudge to the third wave guys.
I agree. And actually, I'm kind of glad that it did happen that way, because I was really hoping because I've actually quite enjoyed that feud with Shibata against the third generation. I've really actually enjoyed that feud.
Yeah, it was great. They told a really good story with it. And I think this, with having Nagata win the belt and having Shibata drop it, I think this is New Japan. This is Gedo basically positioning Shibata in a higher card role.
I think.
Well, we'll see. I mean, there's definitely going to be a rematch coming, and
I
hate to see this feud end. Honestly, yeah, it's been very entertaining.
Yeah, it's been really good, but I think it's for the best to have Shibata lose the belt, drop it, maybe lose the rematch, go on to, you know, maybe even try and get the IC belt. Someone mentioned that in Japan, I don't know if you noticed this. So they have these screensavers, which are like promotional use things for fans in New Japan, in Japan.
Okay.
And on the screensavers, they always put their A-list guys on these screensavers. It's similar to like when you go to a WWE event and it's the people on the cups that you buy. Like those are the people that WWE is fully invested in as top tier talent, their biggest draws, etc.
Right.
Well, in New Japan, they initially had a screensaver with like Nakamura. I think Anderson might have been on it. AJ Styles was definitely on that. Okada and Tanahashi. And now the new screensaver is Naito, Okada, Omega, and Shibata.
Well, Shibata he's really raised his profile recently. I think maybe finally the skepticism about him, you know, after finally coming back. I mean, he's been around now for what, 3 years now, and they finally finally locked him into a contract.
That's really the key point, is the fact that he signed a contract. I think you're going to see him being pushed more in the coming year. So,
yeah, and which is funny because I thought he actually already was on contract, but then it turns out that he finally signed. But yeah, I think maybe now finally all is forgiven with him after, you know, him leaving New Japan the lurch the way he did.
Yeah, you know, he wanted to have his MMA run and it didn't work out, and so now he's back and he wants to completely invest into New Japan. So
yeah,
I think you're going to see him headline some matches here in about a year.
Well, I am definitely looking forward to the rematch between Nagata and Shibata, which is forthcoming at Dominion.
Yeah.
So that's good.
The Dominion card looks great.
So far, yeah, it does. But we can get to that. We can touch on that here in a few minutes. Kushida beat Jushin Liger. So if that doesn't cement him as the junior ace, I don't know what will at this point.
Yeah, this has been his career defining run.
So far, I mean, so he's now actually had four defenses, where before every time he got the belt, he dropped it after one or two. So he's going on a good run now.
Yeah, I think New Japan is all in with him.
Kenny, prior to that, on the 27th, Kenny Omega retained the IWGP Intercontinental belt against Michael Elgin. That was a reschedule match because that was originally due to happen at Wrestling Hinokuni, which of course got canceled because of the earthquakes in Kumamoto.
Yeah.
And I mean, not really too much of a surprise there. I'm not sure about a ladder match coming up between Omega and Tanahashi. I don't know how well that's going to work in New Japan, to be honest.
I honestly think what we're going to see is comparable to a, you know, Razor Michaels ladder match. Not you're going to use the ladder and it's going to play a key role in the match, but it's not going to be, you know, crazy over the top silliness with the ladder.
Yeah, I mean that was kind of the defining ladder match of all time, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Scott Hall and Shawn Michaels with the age of Tanahashi at this point, and I mean, I think he's still working on a bum shoulder too. Maybe.
Yeah. Also, he's got kind of a messed up back.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. So I mean the talent involved, I don't have a question with. It's just the format I wonder about.
Yeah.
So that will be, I mean, that will be also coming up at Dominion, one assumes. So so that was Wrestling Dontaku, and decent show overall, I gotta say.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch the main event, and I didn't watch the Evil Goto match. I will watch that.
Been looking good lately. I have to say, he has been looking good.
Yeah, he's improved. I mean, even from Invasion Attack and into the Road to Dontaku shows, he's improved quite a bit.
Yeah, he has. I mean, he's really stepped his game up, especially now that the spotlight is going to be on Los Ingobernables. So
yeah, I think what you're going to see is basically Goto booking done right.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked that Gato's booking has been phenomenal this year so far. Yeah, you know, with all the changes that have come. So up next,
and this is not a slight on Gato, but I think having the roster shakeup post Wrestle Kingdom 10 has done wonders for New Japan.
It has. We've talked about this before too. I mean, it really has. And considering that we thought that it's going to be a rough road for New Japan, but so far they've come through it big time, I think.
Yeah, I think they're better for it.
Yeah. So and that was really kind of the complaint that everybody had, was that it was just complacent booking last few years.
Yeah. And I mean, you can't blame them when you have the roster that you had at that time.
Indeed not. But they finally, we take those elements out, they got to do something, and they've done something.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at another promotion like WWE, when something like that were to happen, they usually don't fare well in those situations. So I think that says a lot about New Japan's booking in Gato. So,
yeah, he's come through with flying colors so far. We're going to see more adaptability coming up in the Best of Super Juniors, because they announced the full cards, and all the blocks. They just had to make some changes to that, though, because Nick Jackson, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, had some broken ribs suffered at the Toronto War of the Worlds show. So he is now out of the tournament. And Chase Owens, part-time Bullet Club member, former NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion, is coming back into the fold to take his place. But we've also now heard that Matt Jackson of Bullet Club and the Young Bucks has a broken hand. Buddy wrestled last night.
Oh, sorry. I had no idea. That's a very big surprise to me. Wow.
Yeah, but he still wrestled last night. So who knows? I mean, still a broken hand, though. Jeez. I mean, that hurts. Especially in wrestling. So what are we to do here? So looking at that, have you seen the blocks for Best Super Junior?
Yeah. Yeah, I have. It looks like good, really, really good tournament.
The tour starts next Saturday, as we record on the 21st of May, and it goes through until June the 7th at Miyagi Sendai Sun Plaza Hall. And it's a two-block tournament. The winner of A block will face the winner of B block at the final. Going down the list, A block is Kushida, Ryusuke Taguchi, Kyle O'Reilly, Matt Sydal, Rocky Romero, Gato, Bushi, and Matt Jackson. Whereas B block will be Jushin Thunder Liger, Tiger Mask 4, Bobby Fish, Trent Beretta, Chase Owens, Ricochet, Volador Jr. from CMLL, and Will Ospreay making his
debut. I remember there was Wasn't there some talk about trying to get Dragon Lee, or what happened there?
Yeah, I actually don't know. There was some talk about Dragon Lee. I thought Kame Itachi might be coming back for this finally, but it said he's, you know, doing, he's working in Ring of Honor for right now. So yeah, it looks like, yeah, Volador Jr., who is debuting in this, I really don't know why they didn't get more CMLL talents in here. I was kind of hoping to see Barbaro Cavernario come back, honestly.
Yeah, I don't know why.
But, things are what they are. Will Ospreay participating in Best of Super Junior, that, yeah, take my money.
I would like to see, is Ospreay in the same block as Bushi?
He is not.
Okay, Bushi and Ospreay, I'm calling it right now.
You know, actually, I had the same thought. But do we have the same reason why?
I don't know. What's your reason?
My reason is because that continues the Ingobernables Chaos feud.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, story narratively wise, it makes the most sense.
It does, even though, and if Ricochet is not going to be as available as we think he might have been, then that makes more sense.
Yeah. Although, hey, maybe Ricochet pulls it out. Why, you know?
Ricochet against Bushi in the final, I think that would be a great one.
Yeah, I mean, no matter how this shakes out, it's going to be a very, very good tournament.
Yeah. Now, I don't think Kushida will win, just because the way that they set up these tournaments now is that part of the, you know, the honor of winning the tournament is you get a shot at the current champion. And
right.
So I think nowadays a sitting champion winning the tournament is not really going to happen now. Like it used to be able to, like before it used to be that the IWGP champion, heavyweight champion could win G1 Climax, for example.
Right.
But, you know, since now, you know, the shot at Wrestle Kingdom is what's at stake at G1 Climax, you're not really going to see that. I don't think.
Yeah.
So I don't think Kushida's going to win Best of Super Juniors this year.
Yeah,
and with the stuff going on with Ricochet, too many questions over him. I don't think we'll see him win it either.
Yeah, and even going farther forward, I could see Kushida dropping the belt and having a go at the IC, maybe.
It's possible. I mean, I know Kushida's talked about competing in G1 Climax too.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, he's not going to win that, but that would be cool.
It would be. I'd be all for Kushida being in G1 Climax, honestly. So, yeah, I think Bushi wins A block. I also think Will Ospreay wins B block. Because I think that... Now, who wins that, though, is the real question.
Yeah.
Because either way, both Bushi and Ospreay rematching Kushida, I think, will be... I think it would be a great match.
Yeah, my pick would probably be Bushi just because of how hot Los Ingobernables is right now.
Yeah, that would make the most sense, but God, Ospreay against Kushida was fantastic, though, at Invasion Attack.
It was a really great match. I think I could see them wanting to wait a bit more until we see something like that again.
Yeah, I guess I can, too. I guess I can as well, but you know, either way, I think we're in for a good tournament. I don't know how much. What are they going to do if Matt? They already called up the one Bullet Club member they could for Best of Super Juniors, you know, to replace Nick Jackson. What could happen if Matt Jackson suddenly can't compete now because his hand is worse than they thought?
Adam Cole, baby.
Is Adam Cole a junior?
I think so. I mean, the thing about Adam Cole is you can book him either way.
Hmm. Would that muck up the booking, though?
No, I don't think so. I think it would be really interesting booking to have Adam Cole in the Super Juniors.
Yeah, it would be interesting. I'll grant that.
I think he's more what's the word I'm looking for? He's more believable as a cruiserweight at this point, as a junior weight, than he is a heavyweight anyway.
Well, that's true. And you know, the Ring of Honor world title is not it's not a weight. It's just the world champion. They don't say world heavyweight champion.
Right.
Because let's face it, most of Ring of Honor's roster are not traditional heavyweights.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, so I think we'll have to wait and see on that. I mean, Nick Jackson's definitely out. Matt Jackson may be out. They haven't said anything yet.
Yeah, and also, I mean, if it's a broken bone on his hand, then you know, he'll definitely be out, I think.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I saw a picture of him with his hand taped up, and even though he did wrestle last night, but, I mean, who knows how much work he actually did.
Right, right. And I mean, that's just one match. Think about a tournament.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. I am with you there. Prior to Best of Super Juniors is Lionsgate Project 2 show will be this coming Thursday, the 19th of May. It looks like another New Japan versus Noah show at face value.
Yeah.
There are a couple of matches I'm looking forward to seeing, though. I think Naomichi Marufuji against Jay White, I think that might be the match of the night.
Yeah, Jay White is great.
Although, Goshi Ozaki against Juice Robinson, that could be a promising, too.
Maybe. I'm not really big on Juice.
I think Juice looks good in certain situations, though.
I don't see any situation where he looks good.
Well, okay, fair enough. there's some K-Dojo participation in this show as Ayato Yoshida will be taking on Hitoshi Kumano of Noah at the show. I don't really watch a whole lot of K-Dojo, so I don't know Yoshida very well. Are you familiar with him at all?
No, not at all.
Okay, well, I guess that makes two of us. So I guess we're going to be pleasantly surprised, hopefully.
Was there All Japan?
I'm sorry?
Was All Japan being involved in this tournament, or am I?
No, I think you're thinking of the next thing we're going to talk about.
Oh, okay.
All Japan does their own developmental thing with Big Japan right now.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, but yeah, this one is mostly it's New Japan and their young lions against, you know, Noah's some young lions, some of the more high end guys.
The Suzuki gun's being called in that, right?
No, there is no Suzuki gun unless you want to, you know, say that Taka's somewhat involved just because there's a K-Dojo guy.
Right. What was the thing then that I saw that Suzuki Gun was going to be involved somehow with Noah and New Japan and
that's going to be the next thing I'm going to talk about. That will be the Super J Cup.
Okay.
Which that is, you know, separate from the Best of Super Juniors and all that. This is, you know, a return of, you know, the cross promotional tournament of legend.
Right.
They made some announcements on Friday that, first of all, the Super J Cup was originally supposed to be just the show on August the 21st at the Ariake Coliseum. Now they've added an opening show on July the 20th at Crockett Hall, which all the first round matches are going to happen. That, of course, is also in the middle of G1 Climax. Oh. But since that is, you know, a junior show rather than a heavy, you know, heavyweights, then it shouldn't affect much. So, yeah, we're going to have like two New Japan things going on at once. But they did announce that there's going to be they did announce who's going to be involved. 01 was originally announced as being part of this, but they pulled out, and now All Japan will be part sending a wrestler to it, which that's kind of big. I don't think All Japan and New Japan have worked together since 2011.
Oh wow! Okay.
I don't think since they did, you know, the joint 40th anniversary shows, and then they did that the All Together shows with Noah, where it was the charity show after the tsunami.
Okay.
In 2011. So now, excuse me. So yeah, I don't think All Japan and New Japan have worked together since Keiji Muto was at All Japan.
Huh. All right.
So, New Japan will be sending four wrestlers and kind of hosting this. One of them is going to be a member of Chaos. So, begin the speculation now. I think it'll be Will Ospreay.
Yeah. Yeah, very likely, yes.
Because, I mean, the other Chaos Juniors are Rocky Romero, Trent Beretta, and Gato. So, I think Ospreay probably stands the most to benefit from this.
Yeah.
Pro Wrestling Noah will be sending three. Suzuki-gun are sending two wrestlers. Now, of course, the joke here is that not only has New Japan been helping to book and bankroll Noah for the last year, but, you know, everyone in Suzuki-gun are New Japan contracted wrestlers. So,
is Shelton Benjamin still in Suzuki-gun?
He is.
So he's a Noah guy.
Well, all of Suzuki-gun have been in Noah. There are two actual Noah members of Suzuki-gun, Takashi Sugiura, who's the current, you know, GHC champion, and the current GHC junior champion, Yoshinobu Kanemaru.
Okay.
But no, Shelton X Benjamin is still New Japan contracted.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
As is everybody in Suzuki-gun except for Sugiura and Kanemaru.
For some reason, I thought Benjamin was Noah only, but never mind.
Yeah, no. Ever since Wrestle Kingdom 9, Suzuki-gun's been in Noah.
Yeah. Okay.
So All Japan is sending one wrestler. CMLL is only sending one wrestler. Again, I don't know why CMLL isn't getting more involved. It just strikes me as strange.
Yeah, that might be a CMLL managerial decision.
Yeah, that's very true. Dragon Gate will be sending one wrestler. I don't know who they have like a ton they could send.
Right.
So I couldn't even begin to speculate. Kintai Dojo will be sending one wrestler, as will Ring of Honor, and Ryukyu Dragon, who's an indie promotion in the northern part of Japan.
Okay, yeah, I haven't heard of him.
And so there's one spot open for another one that they haven't announced yet. Now, there's a guy who's wrestling in Wrestle One, Keiji Muto's promotion, named Jiro Ikemen Kuroshiro, which I don't know if you're familiar with him. He wrestles in a suit jacket.
Okay.
And he's been doing a trial series, which he's lost most of them so far. But it's been against guys like Daisuke Sekimoto and Jun Kasai, and I guess he's going to be challenging the Great Muta now, too.
Oh, all right.
So, yeah, there's that. But he did mention that he wanted to be part of this show, you know, the Super J Cup. And even though Wrestle One wasn't announced as being one of the participants, and that would be very interesting considering Wrestle One, All Japan, and Big Japan have all been kind of working together lately.
Okay.
And the symbolism of Wrestle One and All Japan working together is that, you know, Muto split from All Japan after he got bought out, and you know he started Wrestle One, and now Jun Akiyama is now wanting to, you know, because All Japan are frankly in dire straits. So they're having to work with anybody they can at this point.
Right. Right.
So there's a lot of weird symbols. And of course, you know, Noah being involved, Noah being a promotion that started after also splitting from All Japan.
Yeah.
So
why doesn't DDT get involved with these things?
You know, that's a good question. And I don't know why. I mean, other than the fact that, you know, not every promotion can work with everybody. But I think I'm wondering if there's some sort of friction between New Japan and DDT now because of what happened with Kota Ibushi.
I see. Okay.
I'm wondering. I mean, it's just idle speculation at this point, but.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not altogether sure why DDT is not involved. I think they'll be. So, I mean, it's possible that DDT could send somebody. So, who, you know, I hadn't even thought about that, to be honest.
Okay.
I mean, hell, Michinoku Pro could send somebody still.
Right.
So, I guess we're just going to have to wait and see on that point. So, that's coming up. So, now we're going to have not one, but two Super J-Cup shows. One July 20th, the other one August 21st. We're going to cover that closer to the time it happens, once they actually start announcing talents. I'm hoping to get some guests in who are more experts on some of these other promotions, like Dragon Gate or, especially Dragon Gate, because that's I watch Dragon Gate here and there. I really still don't know a whole lot about it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know much about Dragon Gate, to be honest.
I mean, I remember watching the early days of Toryumon before they were called Dragon Gate.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know all the whys and wherefores of Dragon Gate, so we may have some people in to help discuss that once we get closer to, maybe somebody who knows K-Dojo a little bit more, too.
Yeah, the only person I can think of off the top of my head that would is maybe Striga.
Yeah, Striga's a good guy. I don't know if, you know, we don't talk much, but yeah, he's a real good guy. He has a good show on MLW Radio called The Eastern Lariat.
Yeah.
We don't always see eye to eye on things, but, you know, we don't have to either. You know, cause sure. That's the beauty of pro wrestling.
Yeah.
So, I think that... they've announced some matches for Dominion. We've already kind of talked about that. So we even already talked about the CMLL breakup of the Ingobernables.
Yeah. Do you think Okada's going to go over at Dominion?
I don't think so, because my plan has been that. Wrestle Kingdom 11 is going to be Okada challenging a champion, Naito.
Okay, yeah.
I said that since Wrestle Kingdom 10. So, yeah, I'm kind of hoping not. So I actually think that will mean Okada wins G1 Climax.
Yeah, my pick was definitely either Okada or Shibata for the G1.
Shibata would be an interesting pick. That would be interesting, especially since, you know, Shibata and Naito had a great feud last year.
Yeah, and they had some great G1 matches. So
They did. One last thing I want to talk about here real quick. I found out last night that Akira Hokuto, the Joshi wrestler,
okay,
and wife of former IWGP champion Kensuke Sasaki, had undergone a mastectomy. She's having cancer issues right now.
Oh no!
I guess Kensuke Sasaki has gone into debt because of this and is looking for any work at all. Period, wrestling or otherwise.
Yeah.
I know he retired a while ago as a wrestler. Who knows? I don't know if he's in any condition to actually come back. But I just wanted to, you know, I've never been much of a fan of Kensuke Sasaki. I have to be honest. He was not my kind of guy. In those that era of New Japan, I was always more leaning towards Keiji Muto or Masahiro Chono. But you know, I do gotta respect a dude who's going, you know, trying to support his family like that. You know, it is in a trying time.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, so I'm really hoping that, you know, Akira Hokuto does recover from this. And, you know, beats cancer, and also that Sasaki is able to, you know, help, you know, do what he needs to do to support the family, you know, get them back on their feet, you know, especially after going into debt. So, you know, all props to Kensuke Sasaki, and we really hope that Akira Hokuto gets well, too. So, I think that's all I have to say on this show. JB, do you want to? Is there anything you want to plug real quick?
Yeah, I will. Well, I have a comic that you know, Brainbuster 2019. It's digitally published by Comicer. It's currently available on Comicer, Comixology, and Kindle. And so, yeah, pick that up. Issue one is out. Issue two should be out in, I'd say, about a month, month and a half. I'll be contributing to the next screw job. And
that's a comic fanzine for pro wrestling, correct?
Sorry?
Screw job, it's a comic fanzine for pro wrestling, correct?
No, you're thinking of Atomic Elbow.
Oh, okay. What's screw job?
Screwjob is a comic anthology that's put out issue by issue. Usually has about 5 or 6 stories in each issue. They usually max out at about 6 pages per story.
Right.
Box Brown contributes to it every issue.
Oh, he's a good guy. He had that great, you know, Andre the Giant graphic novel.
Yeah, yeah. So he has a story in every issue. Paul Lyons, who is head of Hidden Fortress Press, who publishes Screwjob, also has a story in each issue. I'll be tabling with Paul and Hidden Fortress at Cake, which is coming up at the end of June here in Chicago.
And you'll have a print for that, I hear.
Yeah, I'll have Hidden Fortress has been doing a series of art prints, screen prints. Box Brown did the first one. I forget who did the third one, or the second one, rather, but it's of RVD. The first one that Box did, it's of Dusty, and my print, which will be debuting at Cake, will be of Tetsuya Naito.
So, and I've seen it so far, it's excellent, so if you're in Chicago at the end of June, go to Cake, the Chicago Alternative Comic Expo, and pick that up. I plan on being there to do just that, so...
Awesome. Yeah, and I mean, I'll be doing some other dates. I'll be doing Heroes Con in Charlotte. That's going to be in... Actually, that is in June as well, tail end of June.
So you got a busy June coming up.
Yeah, June's going to be 2 events, and then August I'll be at Kansas City, and then September I'll be in Cincinnati for Cincy Con.
Well, I might go to that. I'm actually kind of close to that, so I might actually go to that. So
yeah, you said it's a fun show. Lots of really cool talent that usually go there. Tony Moore and Kara Moore. Well, actually, I think she goes by her last name. They put the show together, so they're the organizers. They're really good people. Worth checking out. And also, what else? We got some other stuff in the pot, working on stuff. So I guess a lot of it I can't really talk about yet, but
Maybe if I come
back. Of course. So yeah, I mean, I'd love to have you back sometime. So hopefully we can make that happen, and hopefully with you know, Chris and Steve next time too. So
yeah, that'd be great. I would like to be back for sure. Also, I'm contributing to a Kickstarter from Parts Unknown, put out by Brett, who you met, I believe, at the Global War Show.
And I've given to that Kickstarter too. So
awesome. Yeah, Christopher Daniels is actually contributing to that book too.
Yeah, Christopher Daniels, we had a good conversation about comics while we were waiting. Well, he was at the merch table. Because we have something in common. We've both written for Art Baltazar's All Yeah comics.
Because
I had a one pager in All Yeah number 11. So nice. That shout out to Kurt Wood, who drew that one. So
awesome. Yeah. I haven't met him yet, but he seems like a really cool guy.
Yeah, they are pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, when you get him out of character, Daniels and Kazarian are both pretty cool. So
yeah, and the Kickstarter ends in 6 days. Still has quite a bit to go, so.
Hopefully. Oh, that's a shame. I'll be sure to hype it.
Cool. And yeah, so hopefully I'll be back for the next go around.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's gonna be the next show recording is gonna be a while. It's gonna be either June the 9th, which will actually be before the Best of Super Junior final, or it'll be on the 12th, which will be after. So sometime in early June. We're planning to come back and do that. So in the meantime, enjoy Best of Super Juniors. Enjoy Lionsgate Project 2. Hope you enjoyed Global Wars and War of the Worlds if you were able to attend or see any of those shows. By the way, shout out to Dion and Bunches, the SOS Wrestle Talk podcast on SoundCloud if you want to look them up. They're friends here from Indianapolis, and they were at Global Wars too. So nice seeing them again.
Yeah, there were a lot of people at that show that a lot of podcasters and wrestling fans that I know from online. My buddy Tyler was there. He has a podcast called Rock and Wrestling.
I've heard of that one.
Yeah, check it out. It's pretty good. He's really nice, and also my buddies. Well, they weren't at the show, but I talked to them about it afterwards. Eric and Brian in San Diego, they have a podcast called The Go Home Show. So check them out too.
I've heard of that one too. So
yeah, good show. Check them out. Bunch of, you know, a couple of good brothers. Definitely say hi to them. They're on Twitter too. Oh, I'm on Twitter and Instagram. Mort Crimp Jr. MORTCRIMPJR. You can hit me up on Instagram or Twitter. I'm usually pretty good about responding to things. So find me there.
All righty. Well, JR, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us on the Strong Style Story podcast and fill in this time around.
You call me JR.
Did I call you JR?
Good old JR.
I'm sorry. And on that note, actually, in about 2 weeks, New Japan on Access will be coming back with JR. They're going to be covering G1 Climax from last year. So yeah, if you G1. Missed that the first time around, go ahead and see that, because that actually had a great semifinals and final.
Yeah, and that'll be a good introduction to people who haven't been watching New Japan or following what's been going on now. You get to see the rise of Tetsuya Naito's current gimmick.
That's true. That is definitely true.
Because they did some shows, some mixed tag shows before this one that they recorded on Axis. Or he had just come back and he had those mixed tag matches with Hanma, where he was kind of leaving them out to dry a lot.
Yeah, and Juice Robinson too, because I remember one specifically where Robinson screaming at Naito, "Tag me!"
Yeah, yeah. So if you want to,
that was the beginning of it. That is definitely true. So they've already shown part of it with the Dominion matches, but now you can see the Ingobernable. We'll see it full on raging with the skull and everything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's a treat to behold, as well as one of the best ever, you know, down the line, one of the best ever Okada Nakamura interactions you'll ever see too, but that's, you know, down the line. So
yeah.
So All right, JB Rowe, I appreciate you coming on the show. We're going to be recording again either June the 5th or 12th. I haven't decided which yet. So stay tuned for that. I know it's a long time between shows, but this is, it is what it is. So enjoy Best of Super Juniors. This has been the Strong Style Story podcast. You can follow us at Strong Style Story on Twitter. Just leave off the E off of style because of Twitter character limits. We're also at strongstylestory.tumblr.com for the regular blog. So for JB Rowe and on behalf of Chris DiMassimo and Steve Cash, I'm Jeffrey Wessel. Thanks for listening. See you next time.